You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome to the School of Influence podcast, where the queen and king of influencer marketing, authors and professors Amanda Russell and Neil Schaefer, cut through the noise and dissect what makes brands and professionals influential. No fluff, just the real deal.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the School of Influence podcast. A few episodes ago, we had a cosmetic surgeon turned entrepreneur. Today, we have a similar but different story of an orthopedic surgeon who is also extremely entrepreneurial and doing amazing things all around the brand of Vitality. Well, I'm sure we're going to hear more about that. Amanda, I'm going to hand the mic over to you.
I am very excited to talk to Dr. Alan Mishra, who is the board certified orthopedic surgeon. He's also an entrepreneur, founder of Dare to Be Vital, which is a really vital company right now. Amongst other things, he's also an educator and he's involved in a lot of different things. So really excited to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us today, Alan.
I'm super excited, Neil and Amanda. This is what I love to do. So I can't wait. I'm really maybe a little curious as to what your questions are going to be, but let's dive in. Let's jump into the deep end of the pool. I'm ready.
Yes. So you're a board certified orthopedic surgeon. Most people know exactly what that means, but you have a lot of different layers and you got involved in something called Dare to Be Vital. Can you tell us a little bit about like your journey from medicine into other things and
sure.
what those things are?
Absolutely, Amanda. So can I start with a question for both of you? I know you're supposed to be asking me the questions, but I have a question for both of you.
Yeah.
Has anyone ever taught you how to be vital?
Nope.
Nope.
Excellent. So that's sort of my snarky question that I begin most of the things with. So, and then I'll tell you a little bit of the origin story. So the origin story of Dare to Be Vital goes back almost exactly 5 years. And 5 years ago, I was invited to go to Hong Kong, which I really wanted to go to for some of my platelet-rich plasma research, which I've been doing for a long period of time. And I've been published a bunch of papers on how to use PRP or platelet-rich plasma for orthopedic and athletic injuries. So this is a phenomenal opportunity to go be a keynote speaker at the Chinese University of Hong Kong. And I said to my family, hey, do you want to come with me to Hong Kong? And I said, it's actually on my birthday. My talk was going to be literally on my birthday. And they looked up the weather in Hong Kong in July. And they're like, nope, I don't want to go to Hong Kong. And so, because it's pretty hot and humid in early July in Hong Kong. And they said, where else can we go? And then my wife and I looked at each other and we're like, oh my God, it's not exactly in the neighborhood. But we decided to divert to go to Australia. So we had always, myself especially, always wanted to go on a vacation to Australia. So prior to my going to Hong Kong for the meeting, we spent about 2 weeks in Australia. And again, one of those major bucket lists was I wanted to go scuba diving in the Great Barrier Reef. So we ended up in Sydney and Uluru in the middle of the outback and then finished in a small town called Port Douglas, which is in Northern Australia, right near the Great Barrier Reef. And the interesting part about that was there's this beach and it's called 4 Mile Beach. And for about 3 days in a row, I would run 2 miles down the beach and go swimming a little bit in the coral sea, come back and run 2 miles back. And I was just wearing my shorts, no shirt, no socks, no anything. And I was a bad track and field athlete in high school, mediocre, shall we say, in the middle of Michigan. And I just had that Chariots of Fire music as my feet were splashing. And I came back up and I'm standing underneath this like 80 foot tall palm tree. It's a gorgeous morning. I'm looking out at the coral sea and it was like, oh my God, I feel vital. And then it was something like out of the, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, Nolan movie Inception. It's like somebody put that idea in my head. What is vitality? And I'm like, okay, of course I'm vital. I'm on vacation. I'm in Australia. My phone doesn't work. I don't really have that many responsibilities. But for the next year or so, I vigorously studied scientifically what that could potentially mean in terms of things like testing my own blood, my own microbiome, my own DNA, my heart rate variability, a whole bunch of wearable types of devices. And I came up with, you know, biologic vitality is one component of it, spent another year studying the other components of vitality. And then I came up with my thesis. And it's the same thesis to this day, is that vitality is a skill. All right. And then I've come up with a working definition. I call it a working definition of vitality because it's something I hope to evolve and improve upon. But right now I call vitality purposeful, vigorous, and connected living. So after a couple of years of this stuff, I had about 400 pages of notes. And then I applied to teach a course at Stanford through continuing studies on how to enhance your vitality. And I've been around the institution for a long time. What are you doing? You want to teach somebody how to be vital? Huh? Are you crazy? And so then I dumped about 150 pages of stuff on them. That I will give you a try. So then I've been teaching this Vitality Essentials class at Stanford now for a couple of years. And it's just been a phenomenal, interesting ride that's sort of separate from my day job, but also melding back together.
So what is like Dare to Be Vital? So when you say you teach it, what is the company exactly?
So Dare to Be Vital now is a small company that I started a couple of years ago to sort of operationalize vitality. Okay. I try to choose my words very carefully, you guys. And I know you're influencers and very, very smart people. But when I say operationalize vitality, people go, I want to be more vital. Okay. Well, that's just right. Amorphous to me. That's not really a, so when I say Dare to Be Vital, I mean like, okay, how are you going to become more vital? And that the reason I came up with that phrase to be the moniker for the company is that I try to take things that I've learned and boil them down to what I call vetted vitality info snacks. Okay. Little pieces of information scientifically based that I can use to teach people. So under that umbrella right now, part of it is the course I teach at Stanford. Part of it is the consulting I do for companies. And part of it is sort of TBD here, which I am working on some high-tech versions of what I can do to deploy this at scale and in specific industries. So that's a little, I'm happy to come back and talk about it when I can. But for right now, we're working on meaningful, simple, which is very hard, ways to help people become their most vital selves.
How do you build this brand? It sounds like right now you have key influential factors, which are, an MD or an orthopedic is one, right? By nature, you already come with sort of a force of credibility with that. And, we spin a lot of this towards marketing. So curious to know what other, because that really is, that in itself is marketing. To be able to say that means something in people's heads. Stanford as well is another force of influence, right? People know and respect and trust that brand. What kind of things are you using your brand partnerships or forces of influence to scale a brand like this? Because it's so foreign to people.
That's a very good question, Amanda and Neil. I really have thought a lot about the branding of this. And I have to tell you that I probably would get a D- in branding and marketing. But what I've done is, I think, turning it upside down. Again, I'll tell you just a different story. So I went to a seminar. This was probably 3 years ago because it was live. And it was a innovations in sports medicine seminar at the Graduate School of Business at Stanford. So it was a very high-end group of people. And they were selling a variety of different things that could help enhance elite athletes. And I asked them that same question. I said, do you guys have the toy that measures vitality? They tilted their head like, what? And so as I'm walking out of this, the business school at Stanford is the best place on the planet. Just ask the people who go there, right? And so I'm walking away from this meeting, and this guy who's a student there, he taps me on the shoulder. He goes, "Hi, Dr. Mishra, how are you doing?" And I go, "Hello." And he said, "Oh, you don't remember me? You took care of me for my knee injury." And I said, "Oh yeah, hi." And I'm chatting. And he said, "I heard your question. What's your story?" And I said, told him everything I was telling you. He goes, "Well, why don't you give a talk at the business school in a couple of weeks?" And I go, "Oh, you have no idea. You have no idea. I'm like the baby. I don't know what I'm doing. I call myself a vitality explorer." So I took a deep dive and I took a chance. That was the first place that I gave a vitality talk, business school at Stanford. That has led to an enormous number of other opportunities. And I'm going to try something out on you guys, because I do not consider myself trying to influence people, but I came up with this idea in anticipation of our call today, or this podcast. I think what I'm working on, and please feel free to give me some constructive criticism on this, I'm trying to work on what I call purpose-driven influence. So for Dare to Be Vital, the company, or for me personally, I boiled it down. It took me 2 years to boil down the purpose of that organization to enhance global vitality one person at a time. And again, each word is carefully chosen, because originally it was just enhance global vitality, which is kind of a really crazy, ambitious idea. And then when I put the comma in there and said one person at a time, it allowed me to do things like last year, I was asked to give a webinar for all of Stanford during the pandemic. And I said, oh my God, people want to learn more about how to be vital. And there was about 880 people on that call. And it was awesome. And then 2 weeks later, the chemistry department at Stanford said, hey, would you do one for us? And I said, oh, sure. Because they said, some people didn't get on there. We can't find the recording. I said, well, how many people are going to be there? And they said about 30. And then 7 people showed up. And they were so embarrassed. And I said, we had an amazing conversation for an hour because it was just 7 or 8 people. And that's when it hit me that when I'm doing your podcast now or meeting with people, my goal is really honestly just to enhance their vitality. And if this reaches one person, we can talk about specific ways that I've uncovered that are meaningful, then I will have executed on my mission. And when I talk about that in the context of influence, which is, I think, what you guys are very experts at, I don't think of myself as trying to get 200,000 or 500,000 or 1 million followers. Let's take Clubhouse as another example. You know, I've been in rooms where I've had 1,500 people in my room, and I've been in rooms where I've had 5 people. I may have more influence when I have those 5 people there than when there's 1,500 people there. And when I stick to my mission, my purpose, and just really rigorously stick with that, I'm hoping I have more meaningful influence. But I don't know if this concept of purpose-driven influence is crazy or okay, but please help me.
Actually, no, what you're talking about is one of the reasons that we started this podcast, because Neil and I both, we've written books on influence, we teach influence, we study influence, and we're sitting in a culture, especially in marketing, where there's a term influencer marketing that people are not automatically associating that with some sort of social media following, real or fake, and that the term influencer, it's actually kind of a funny term, right? Because like influence is an outcome, not really a job description. And like you have influence, and what you're talking about in the rooms in Clubhouse or the room at Stanford that has 7 people, you know, it doesn't matter if you have 7 people or 7 million people, but it's who are those people in the room? How does it impact them? How does it scale? So what comes to mind first, it's interesting when you talk about vitality and having to define it, because it's almost similar to what Neil and I have. And Neil, you can, you know, step in and correct me. But like what I was thinking was like how Neil and I have defined influence and kind of been on this mission to be like, no, it's really about influence. Like it's been around since the beginning of time. It's not about social media. And that's kind of what you're doing with this term vitality, because it's kind of this vague term, right? That's not very tangible like influence. And what you need to do is kind of get people right away to understand what it means. And I think in order to scale something like a business like that, the first step is awareness, but it's more than awareness. It's understanding, because you could be aware of it all day long, but like even me, I've been a competitive athlete. I've heard all these terms. I've studied every wellness. I had a fitness brand. I've used every freaking product. I've consulted for 1 million fitness brands and health and wellness bars and platforms. Yeah. And I personally am still like, so what does it mean, vitality? Like, what is it? Was it a prescription? Is it like, what are the tenets of it? So for influence, you know, Neil and I kind of go attention plus trust. It's not just attention. Anybody can have attention, but attention doesn't mean influence. Social media doesn't mean influence. An audience doesn't necessarily mean influence. So I think that to me, when I hear Dare to Be Vital, I would be like, okay, so what does that mean? And I think you've got all of the, like a lot of the things that most people already brought the hardest parts to the table, which are like, you know, you've got the Stanford behind you, you've got the orthopedic surgeon, you've got the story needs to be told, and having other people's stories that get it, right? Like athletes that you've treated that you're like, you know what, I'm going to put you on this, whatever your vitality program is for, like, just, I'm going to give you, I need 20 people. You know, I need somebody from soccer. I need somebody that's a recreational, you know, marathon runner. And let's just do this. And then those become your marketing. Those become, because that's authentic, right? And that's, they've experienced it. It's changed their life. So when I think of health and wellness brands or something like that, that's immediately where I think it's going to be most influential in scaling. I don't know if you've, or you probably maybe have already thought about doing that.
Oh, a little bit, but I'd love to hear what you have to say, Neil, as well.
You know, to me, when you said that moment on the beach in Australia, vitality, I was trying to define, well, what is vitality, right? And it is one of those sort of, it's an intangible. We know it's related to wellness, and wellness is one of the greatest markets to be in by any means. But, you know, to me, I would define it as the feeling of being alive. And when you were talking and you were talking about, you know, you were going to invest in technology, I immediately, you know, a few weeks ago, I was listening to a podcast and they said that Tom Brady religiously uses the Brain HQ app to train his brain to stay mentally alert. So I think it's the outcome that people look for when they, you know, people didn't originally think, oh, I need to, you know, work on my brain. I need to exercise my brain. It's the outcome that matters. I'm going to be able to think faster, feel younger, whatever it is. So, you know, I sort of get back to my definition, feeling more alive. How do we help you feel more alive? And I think the athletics is, as Amanda said, it's perfect. Those are the people that get paid for their athleticism, for the energy they bring. And I mean, it could be musicians. There's all sorts of different fields. We just interviewed someone from the entertainment industry. I think of, you know, that industry as well. But yeah, you know, having someone like a Tom Brady saying that they use that product for this outcome, you know, I have a very tiring life, but because I use a Dare to Be Vital's program, I am always, you know, I'm always able to perform at the highest. And I think that might be the missing, I'm sure you've thought about this and are working on a lot of this as well. But to me, I think that's where if brands reach out to influencers, they're looking for that outcome, right? There's always a indirectly, they want the influencer to talk about this message. Yeah. So I think it's, what is that? And I think you have all those pieces. It's just that branding and that statement that going through this program will make you, you know, X will make you Y.
It's an interesting thing, and you guys are spot on. I've been thinking about this for years. So the idea of vitality, though, I think I got stuck for at least a year and a half on the physical component of it. But I really now believe, and the data supports this, is that your sense of vitality is sort of a constellation of your physical, mental, social, and spiritual well-being. And each one of them are interactive. And so if you're just going to work on your physical vitality in the absence of your mental, social, and spiritual vitality, you're not going to be your most vital self. And if you focus just on becoming the smartest person or the most social person, but you end up not taking care of your physical vitality, you're not going to be there. So I have lots of different visual things that I use in my webinars, seminars. I've developed, you know, ideas on cognitive behavioral psychology and how to help people help themselves. And that's the part where technology comes in, where it doesn't have to be that sophisticated. And here's the important part. Both of you know, and everybody's a little different, by the way, both of you know when you feel you're most vital. Okay. And so part of it is just becoming more aware of what you do. Like that's the gotcha moment for me. And that goes back a little bit to when I was an orthopedic surgery resident. When I was in my last year, we would work with this guy. We used to call him the Bear because his hands were huge and he was an awesome surgeon. And we do super complex cases. And it was this 3-hour knee surgery. And, you know, we got done with it and I'm writing the orders in the recovery room. And he comes in and he puts his bare paw on my hand and goes, Alan, did you look at the x-rays? And the x-ray in orthopedic surgery is like, you know, it's like, it's got to be right. And I hadn't looked at the x-rays yet. And I was like, oh, no. And he goes, well, we're going to go in the conference room and look at the x-rays. And I go, okay. He puts the x-ray up and I looked at it and I'm looking at it and I'm looking at it. And I'm like, okay, it looks like it's pretty good in my head. You can't lie. You can't be inauthentic. If you made a mistake, you have to take the patient back to the operating room. And I just had to go with my gut. I said, I think it looks pretty good. And he starts laughing. He goes, it doesn't look good. It looks awesome. And he said, we're going to spend the next hour going through everything we did in the operating room as to how we got there, because we did not get lucky. And that has stuck with me for a long time. So when I was on the beach, fast forward to the beach when I'm feeling vital, I'm like, wait a minute, pause. We always pause when something goes wrong. In medicine, we call it morbidity and mortality. But in life, I don't think we pause enough when things are going right. And when things are going right, did you sleep better? Did you have a good conversation with your partner, your mom, your dog? Did you, you know, serve somebody? And what did you do to be, you know, a more sense of vitality? By the way, there is no scoring system for vitality. I'm working on one. There's no validated version of that. And most importantly, I think there's no framework. So if I boil it down to what I've done, I have developed a framework that has now been executed at the elite level. So I've been teaching my course. I've done webinars at some of the top places on the planet. I have been vetted by very, very challenging audiences, shall we say. So some of the stuff you see and on the website, there's lots of reviews of the webinars and seminars and courses I've done from people. And I now have data as well as to, does it enhance your sense of vitality? Again, that's a difficult thing to define, but I did a course for a company out of Atlanta this year, and 91% of them said after the month-long Ignite Vitality program, their vitality was improved. Now, that's a soft endpoint.
It's a program, correct?
It's a program. So it's evolved from just a bunch of amorphous ideas into a course book that's up on Amazon, and now into what I call the Ignite Vitality program. And that's a series of text messaging things you can get on your phone, 200 words or less per day, with links to more information and questions, and I think this is important, and live interactive Zoom-based webinars.
It's really fascinating because you have all the components, and just there's also this whole world of like the stem cell and the PRP, and this is all stuff that I've looked extensively, and actually scheduled PRP for last week, canceled it last minute because I didn't know if it was going to be that helpful for what I needed it for. But like I've done so much research, and I'm actually doing not to get this about me, but a documentary right now that is highly related to a lot of this stuff, which is the dark side of athletics, but especially elite female athletics, and how it's affected them long term because of the lack of estrogen for so many years, and how that plays out in their lives, and how it actually creates a brain chemistry that, you know, it's the physiological is manifested in the brain as well. And I mean, I'm living proof because I think I'm a textbook case of all the, I mean, you've seen it, I'm sure, in a million female athletes of all the long-term issues that they have. So I've explored tons of, so I think that there's a certain market there as well for that. But, and all those components of like PRP, all the different, the procedures, people are also using them in the entertainment industry and people with money are using them for staying young, looking young. So there's a whole physical component, but then there's the spiritual side, which all of these components and like seem to have already like the stereotype in your head, right? You know, like you've got the influencer that does like this meditation spiritual guru, and then you have like the person, yeah, the plastic surgeon that does the physical. So I guess what I'm saying is like what you have is all of those things. And so I'm wondering if it's almost like getting really, really niche and figuring out, okay, let's start with like one specific market, and who are the people that are really influencing and moving that market? Do we want to champion more of the athletic crowd? Do we want to champion more of the, like, you know, the om spiritual, like, you know, I'm vital, you know, the term vitality comes to mind when I think of that kind of person. Like, I wish that I could meditate. I don't, but I heard that I should. But people have like sent me, you know, meditation gurus and influencers and whatever. So I guess I'm kind of going around and around, but I'm what I'm saying is like, you've kind of got right now, it's almost like a brand, like look at the brand of like Ralph Lauren or Hermes, and they have all these different, you know, they're not just clothing. They're all these different things, but they started out with one thing and they championed it really, really well. And right now it's trying to champion like one. What would you say, Neil? I love this because I love like the case study of trying to figure something out in this space.
I mean, and what Dr. Mishra's done in a small way, in a very, very different way, I've done something sort of similar where it's sort of this pursuit of excellence, right? and you didn't think of the market or how to productize it first. You ran with the idea and how to pursue it, how to research it, and now how to teach it to others. And you've been able to find corporate clients. You teach. I've sort of come a very, very similar path in my own with marketing, right? And now it's like, okay, now, you know, it's such a universal topic that has universal appeal. There's so many directions you can take it. And I'm sure you're at that point now where it's like, and you yourself as an entrepreneur, how can you scale, right? And you scale through creating product, and hopefully that product helps you scale and helps you hire people and have you. So I think you're at a very, very interesting, you know, area. One part is niche, which you could certainly do. I don't think there's any one right or wrong answer. And I think this is part of being of vitality is being able to decide which direction you want to go, and really, you know, drinking your own medicine. So, you know, based on that, based on this approach to vitality, what direction, I mean, out of everything that we've talked about, what you know, how do you feel right now as to where you want to take it? Because I feel like it's a very exciting, like almost this tipping point moment.
Oh, it is. Where you guys are so onto it. By the way, Neil, I think what you're talking about and what I teach in some of the webinars is it's sort of a Japanese concept of Kaizen, and that is continuous improvement. I think Toyota it was one of the first companies that really embraced that as part of their. And I've been very lucky to go to Japan a couple times for the PRP research and present in Tokyo and Sapporo, and appreciate the mentality of trying to get better each day and just compare yourself to yourself the day before. So absent some of the specifics things that I believe I've uncovered a market that's going to be really interesting. But if I take myself away from that particular area, which I'm focusing on, and I say, I really can't help everybody. I know I can't help everybody. I am presently only interested in helping people that want to help themselves. I cannot help people who want to be a victim. I cannot help people who are trying to what I call binge at the buffet of excuses. If you're interested in helping yourself and maybe taking advantage of my 5 years of homework, my 10, 20, 50,000 hours of time I put into it and saying, when I tell you, and I'll give you, I'm a big proponent of aphorisms, not because, you know, people have criticized me for saying things. I'm going to try three of my most important ones. Number one, these are things that you can do to improve your vitality. Pinpoint your peak purpose. Number two is to think with time in mind. And number three is to stockpile health. So pinpoint your peak purpose, think with time in mind, and stockpile health. And again, I've spent a lot of time choosing each word. And the reason why I start with purpose is if you know your peak purpose, which I've tried to define for myself and my company as enhanced global vitality, one person at a time, it allows me to say absolutely yes to you guys, but it allows me to say absolutely no to other people. And then I just say, listen, that just doesn't fit in with my purpose right now. And people go, what? What did you say? I said, well, I'm really trying to think with time in mind. Okay. And I have these phrases that I use in my courses and my webinar. Thinking with time in mind changes every thought. Thinking with time in mind changes every thought. So at least 15 to 20 minutes per day, every single day, and I'm extraordinarily busy, I think about how I'm going to spend my time. My wife looks at me and goes, what are you doing? I go, well, I'm going through my to-do list and figuring out what I'm going to cross off, how I'm going to prioritize it, how I'm going to get it down to three things or less and then focus 80% on the top one. And then if I get to two and three, I'll be there. But if I don't, I don't. I'm going to get what is the one thing, and that may be surgery, that may be going to the office like it was all day yesterday. Today, it's about doing what we're doing. I've been on two or three different podcasts. I've got just an enormous amount of inflow opportunity, which is a long time in the coming. Like it's been years I've been doing this, but you know, Ben was somebody I met through a webinar I did for last year. So when I try to teach people, and I, by the way, on a personal level, I'd love to stay connected with you guys because I'm piloting some opportunities right now, and I'm trying to look for people who would be interested in helping me refine some of these pieces of tech that I'm working on. But it has to be somebody who's committed. Because if they aren't committed to working on their vitality, it doesn't matter how hard I work or how good the information is or how good the program is, it's just not going to work. And so I'm okay with that. And so I actually like, Neil, how you said it's niche or niche. I don't know which way to pronounce that. It's great because I've seen people in Silicon Valley go to their graves trying to solve everything. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stay as laser focused on a very narrow market, nail it. And right now that market is, if it's a corporation or a group of people, it's like, I really want to work on my vitality. I don't want to be well, by the way. We should talk about that if we have time. I want to talk about the difference between wellness and vitality, because I think there's a difference.
Oh, no, there's definitely a difference.
Yeah, and when you were talking there, I mean, those three things you taught, a lot of that, you know, best-selling authors that talk about productivity, there's definitely some overlap there in terms of time management. You know, just do three things every day, 80%, 20% rule. So a lot of what you talk about also taps into these universal things that, even though we may not be familiar with the term vitality, when you broke it down there, there was a lot of familiarity. And I'm almost thinking that because you're in the Silicon Valley, this notion of this these highly performing executives that will spend money every year, the company will pay for them to get executive physicals that go way above and beyond the, you know, I'm almost thinking that that might be a very, very niche market where they understand that value of performing mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually on a day-to-day basis. I don't know. Is that a market that you've thought of before?
Oh, Neil, it's spot on. I've taken care of some of the most elite Silicon Valley executives as an orthopedic surgeon for a long time. And it's an interesting, and maybe some of them will be listening to your podcast. They do not know how to be vital. They really don't. You know, they are incredibly influential, by the way, which is what we're talking about, right? But they are not the most vital people on the planet. And they look at me and they're like, wow, you seem to really know what you want to do with your life. You seem to take care of yourself. You seem to be grounded. And I'm like, you're a billionaire. Like, you know, like I go, I don't want to be a billionaire, because if it, being a billionaire means that, I don't want to do that. So it's back to what I call pinpointing your peak purpose. I wake up every day elated that I get to go help take care of patients in the office, and you know, somebody's gives me enough confidence to let me potentially operate on them. Or even more important, this is a little bit about maybe out there, your vitality is maybe more important than your orthopedic injury. Like if you're entrusting your sense of vitality to what I'm doing, I have a massive obligation to make sure it's not just really good, it's amazingly good, super grounded in science and meaningful. And so when I take that back to this like purpose-driven influence, so if either one of you were my clients and I said, gosh, Neil or Amanda, I want to help you with your vitality, here's some suggestions I have, I damn well better know what I'm talking about, be fully committed to helping you in a meaningful way. And then I indirectly, this is kind of an interesting confession here, I love doing this. So is it selfish? So I'm enhancing my vitality by trying to help other people become vital. So am I ultimately just selfish? And you guys feel free to give me some constructive criticism, because you know, hopefully you can tell that I love doing this, but I'm sort of meta questioning what I'm doing now, because it's so empowering to me personally to be able to have people take what I've tried to learn and teach now and apply it. When people spit back these things to me, like I'm stockpiling health, I'm like, that's cool. You know, or I'm thinking with time in line, or I'm really trying to figure out what my peak purpose is, or I'm daring greatly, all these little phrases that I use.
I actually think that that's the common thread from a lot of the successful people that we've interviewed, or the most influential people that we've interviewed. The common thread is that, and I think Neil and I can even speak to it ourselves in terms of we love what we do. Like we do this because we love it. And it's amazing to get up every, I can't even imagine spending so much of your time working. You spend so much of your time working in your life and not loving it. And I think that's the difference between a job, a career, and really a calling, you know, at the highest level, is where you really feel like you're just, because, you know, it sounds to me like you have a career in medicine, but you have a calling to do something even bigger than that. And that usually is a correlation with influence or success. As Neil and I have been sort of using this podcast on many different levels to sort of study people. It's almost like a research project in itself.
Sure it is.
And finding the, you know, the what are the common threads? What are the certain things that people say to something that's not tangible? Influence is also not tangible, right? But so what are some of those common threads? And so I don't think it's selfish. I think that we need people on the planet that have these callings, because if we didn't, then these kind of breakthroughs, greatest innovations, greatest things that happen on the planet wouldn't be done. So that's how I look. And it's inspiring to hear that because it makes me think, God, I want to work. If I need to do XXX, I want to work with the best. And who's the best? Well, the best is the person that is, you know, this term authentic and means something because you really believe it and you really are called to do it.
Well, one other thought, and Neil, I'd love your thought on this, is that I really would like to have a broad area of influence, but I really believe that if I can connect one person at a time and empower them to be their most vital self, I mean, this is truly what I think. Like, if I can empower Neil, I can empower Amanda, I can empower Susan, whomever, to be their most vital self and execute at their highest level on what they want to do, then I am executing on what I'm supposed to do. And again, if I stick with that one person at a time, because everybody's sense of vitality is a little different. And I have to tell you one other story that's not so fun is that I lost a really close friend of mine in January to ALS. And he was one of the most vital people on the planet. He was at West Point. He was a tank commander. He was a massively successful Silicon Valley executive. And a year and a half ago, he got the worst form of ALS and passed away in January. And even as he was dying, he was insanely vital. Okay. He and his family raised, I don't know, $300,000 or $400,000 for the ALS Foundation. He was, you know, the irony, the sick, disgusting irony is that his company he was working for, you know, got bought up by Google. And, you know, he didn't get to see the ultimate financial rewards. But when I went to his funeral, this socially distanced in the backyard in January, and these are such close friends of ours, it's really hard to talk about. But the religious component of it was amazing. And his family spoke and friends and brother spoke. Nobody talked about his accomplishments as an elite Silicon Valley executive. They talked about the impact on each other. And then at the end of the ceremony, they had an Army honor guard there playing taps, folding the flag, giving it to his wife. And there's maybe 20 people in his backyard. And I promised to keep Kevin's, you know, memory alive as even as you were dying, or especially as you were dying, there are still things you can do to be vital. And so if you have cancer, if you have ALS, if you're 85 years old and you've only got a few more years left, why don't you want to live those as vitally as possible? Because there are still things you can do. The opposite end of that spectrum, by the way, and there's two sort of bell-shaped curves. It is these Silicon Valley executives, people between, say, 35 and 65, but it's also the 18 to 24-year-olds because they're screaming for somebody, at least in my opinion, to make them take ownership over their choices, to make them take ownership over their lives so that they can build their own sense of vitality, their own sense of, you know, what they want to do with their lives, as opposed to having somebody potentially give it to them. So I don't know where I'm going, but I lost it a little bit in talking about my friend Kevin. So
That's a great story. I think stories, you know, people so well, and you're saying you want to do it one person at a time. And one interesting thing that I think about is if you do one person at a time, but you want to scale, finding those people that are one person, but they're one person with that are scaling, you know, like the person that's going to be the ambassador or the person that has, you know, the executive that runs a big company that personally goes through something like that changes his life. That's like, our company needs this. That would be an interesting way to scale. The other audience that I think would be really impactful is, and it's the mission of our film, which is to kind of push a movement forward, starting at the NCAA. Like, it was designed in a very different time and they've made kind of band-aid solutions, but it's not really treating the whole human. You're not coaching the whole human, you're coaching the racehorse. So a program like that, and that's actually the mission of this film, is to, and because I believe in order to get something done, you need to first start awareness and education and educate people and not try to push something at them. So the mission of the film is to bring awareness to the devastating effects of a lot of what happens to young, and it starts at a young age. So that might be, because I don't know what that program is going to consist of. I'm not in that at that level. I'm not at that down the path that far yet, but it's part of a much bigger vision of how do we create change for young. And we have to start young, and we have to start in a way that doesn't tell people they're doing it wrong or try to disrupt the infrastructure of a legacy tradition, but how do you do it in a way that brings education and strikes the emotional chord that they go, oh my God, we need to do something. And that program sounds like that would be the kind of program that we would, well, I would love to implement in starting with the NCAA. So anyways, there's that. But this conversation has been very interesting and I want to respect your time when all kinds of different, and Neil, I kind of like the idea of the building the case, because I feel like so many listeners are like, nobody has it all figured out, right? And sometimes it's just good to bounce ideas off of each other, and what you're doing is so incredible. So thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm thinking we might have to have them in our first Where Are They Now episode, like, you know, a year from now. Where did Dr. Mishra take his business? But I think that the position you're in is a position that there is a lot of entrepreneurs are in, where they've thought about something, you know, they've had some initial success. Sort of, where do you go from here? How do you tap into influence? How do you yourself become more influential? So I think it's going to be a really, really educational episode. And there's no one right or wrong answer, but I think, you know, you have your passion and you truly want to serve people. And I think those two things, of all the people we've interviewed, are some of the common things that have served them very, very well. So I think we're both confident that you'll be making the right decisions. Just as someone, you know, I'm reflecting, because you're also an orthopedic surgeon. You know, I had a torn meniscus in my 40s. I played adult soccer. And if I had, you know, if you had a book then talking about everything you did now, my life now would be very different, because I'm one of those people, oh, we'll get it operated on and it'll be all better, right? But then it's like, physically, it's not all better. There's physical therapy. There's, you know, you need to make lifelong changes in terms of stretching. It's also emotional. Is it okay for me to go back on? At what point should I go back on the field? Should I exert 100%? And then it gets mental and spiritual and everything. So to me, it makes sense that from an orthopedic surgeon that this came about, because the physicality of our bodies is the first thing that we, and Amanda, I'm sure you know as well, obviously being an athlete, that's the first thing that's going to affect like our whole well-being. So I'm really excited about what you're doing. I think that, you know, you have a great book to write. I guess you've already written it. I can't wait to dig into it. But yeah, I can't wait to see where you go from here.
Can I leave you and your audience with one vitality tip that I think it's a new one that I'm working on, but it's one that I think is really important. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So I call it living in the now. All right. So we all, you know, live in the precious present. There's a lot of different ways, but there's something that's free that you can give. You know, we've been doing it with each other, I hope, for the last, you know, 45 minutes or so, but I believe attention is a luxury item. Your attention you give to somebody else is a luxury item. So if you start treating the people you interact with and your attention is a commodity that you don't have to pay anything for, but that you can give to somebody else, I just challenge people to try this out. Live 10 minutes in the now every day. It's incredibly hard not to touch your phone, look away, look at your computer. If you spend 10 minutes when you're talking to somebody next time and you look them in the eyes and you listen with the intent of trying to hear what they have to say, you can drop the mic when you're done, because it just does not exist in our world. And I'm truly trying to spread that message of attention as a luxury item and living in the now. And you'll watch your own vitality rise, because it's so, so rare.
This is so great. I needed that today.
Yeah, man. I just want to give a shout out to Jesse Itzler, one of our first guests, who, if you follow him on Instagram, he's, you know, when he's at his kids' soccer games, he's like, he's there. He's in the now. He's not looking at his phone. He's focused on, right? And
he really lives that.
I echo that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. So much fun, you guys. I mean, regardless of where this goes with the podcast, this has been a blast, and I really appreciate you reaching out and look forward to learning more from what you guys are doing as well.
Absolutely. Yes. Would love to talk to you as well offline about some of the things that you're doing. So we'll have to be, well, let's circle back, Alan. Dr. Alan. Yeah.
I just
took the assumption to myself. So I apologize.
Maybe we either go Dr. Alan or Alan, because it's when they say Dr. Mishra, can I talk to you, it's usually the answering service with the question I don't want to answer.
All right. There we go. So true.
Yeah. And Dr. Anna, where should people go if they want to learn more about your vitality, all your products?
So daretobevital.com. You can also follow me on Instagram at daretobevital. And I try to live what I'm doing. So when I post about it, sometimes my room's on Clubhouse, also at Dare to Be Vital. It would be fabulous. Thank you so much.
Awesome. And this is why you wore the Dare to Be Vital shirt, because I know now to tell you all that it's spelled Dare to Be. It is the number two in the letter B and then vital.
Well, I'm offline story about that. I'll tell you that story. You can spell it either way.
Okay. Awesome to know. Got the forwarding services in.
Thank you so much. And we'll be in touch for sure.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to the School of Influence podcast. Amanda and Neil would be honored if you spend a minute to write a review wherever you are listening to this podcast to help expose these interviews to a broader audience. Make sure you hit the subscribe button so you don't miss out on future episodes. Even better, build your influence and ours by sharing this podcast on your favorite social media with hashtag School of Influence. We would love to hear from and engage with you.